This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
What's it like to realize that you have COVID-19 and survive it? One thing is clear. We are in unprecedented times. At the time of this recording, there are over 1 million confirmed COVID-19 cases across the globe. March alone, we went from life as normal to an outbreak, hitting the U.S. and Europe harder than ever. In the U.S., we still don't have enough tests. Frontline medical professionals are facing a dire shortage of PPE. Hospitals are under capacity. Shelter-in-place policies have been extended. Pharma and biotech companies are racing to find a vaccine and more scalable tests. Although the most vulnerable are elderly, more and more cases of young and healthy people are being affected in ways most did not imagine. Coming up, you'll hear a young, healthy entrepreneur who has been battling COVID-19 the last 3 weeks. In a very personal and riveting account, Patrick Bosworth, CEO of Royalton Investment, a luxury holding company with operations across Europe and the Middle East, and assets across yachting, real estate, hospitality, and technology, shares his personal experience with the virus, how he managed through his toughest moments in isolation at home, and his mindfulness practice that continues to give him strength.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
This is Karen Moon, and we're here for a special episode of Beauty is Your Business with Patrick Bosworth, CEO of Royalton Investment. And one of the reasons this is special is, like, oftentimes our guests are at the forefront of wellness, mindfulness, and all the trends around that. But I thought we had a really interesting opportunity here for Patrick to share his experience. So Patrick, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today and for offering to share your, intimate and intense story, battling COVID-19. You know, you shared with your friends on Facebook, but the fact that you're willing to share this with our community at large is really appreciated.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Karen, for the opportunity.
So first, before we dig in, there's been a lot of confusion around, who it impacts. And can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your lifestyle? Because Sure. You're young, fit, healthy. It's not what we typically had expected, right?
Yeah, it's not what I expected. I'm 42 years old, in reasonably good health, not taking care of myself all the time as well as I know that I should. But I certainly was not particularly worried about me having a hard time with the illness. I've been traveling as much as 300 days a year for the last 4 years for work in a hotel software company. And so my immune system is pretty battle tested. And I assumed that, I would definitely, if I contracted it, would be one of the people who would weather it most easily. And so I was certainly pretty surprised when the symptoms ended up being as severe as they were for me.
Can you share when you realized that, the symptoms you were feeling were COVID, and how did you kind of assess back to the time frame of where it started, and talk to us about that thought process and reflection?
Sure. So one of the frustrating parts of this process has been that I still have no access to testing at all. Southern Nevada is very, very short on tests. And so, I've talked to numerous doctors, and I've had many of the telltale symptoms. And so we continue to operate under the assumption that that's what I've had. And the timing also makes sense, because for my new role, a lot of my business operations are based in Europe. And so I was in Europe for a work trip, basically trying to fit in my last venture abroad before lockdown started. And so I flew to Belgrade, Serbia. And because of jet lag, and then because of morning meetings that I was having there, trying to pack in as much as I possibly could, I basically went 4 days with very little sleep. I think I got something like 10 hours of sleep over 4 days. And so I don't know precisely when I was exposed to the virus. It could have been in a lot of my domestic travel that was leading up to that time period. It could have been in the airport or planes connecting to go to Europe, But I think that the reason that I got so sick was because I basically, you know, knocked down my immune system, didn't take it particularly seriously, and, you know, started to develop a dry cough, kind of a sore throat, but I didn't think too much of it. And then when President Trump, I think it was a Wednesday night or afternoon here in the U.S. from the Oval Office, gave the speech detailing a complete travel ban coming from Europe, which was later clarified that U.S. citizens could come back. But at the time, I rushed home because it wasn't clear that even Americans were going to be able to fly home after the deadline. And so, you know, that was another night where I didn't get any sleep. So that was now 5 days in a row. And then, you know, the symptoms of my throat got a little bit worse. And then starting Saturday morning, I had a fever. And then it escalated remarkably quickly in my case. By that evening, I had a high fever. The cough was now much more pronounced, sort of a dry hacking cough. And then, you know, I woke up at, I think it was like 2:40 in the morning, gasping for breath. And, you know, at that point, I was quite concerned that I was symptomatic with COVID-19.
So at that point, were you able to get a test? Or even at this point, when it seems so obvious, the symptoms seem so obvious, like what happened and how were you in touch with the healthcare system?
Well, so it proved to be pretty difficult to get much information, partially because it was, you know, just before 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning. But because of my nature, I kind of leapt into action to try to get more information than I had and to seek help. And so I texted my primary care physician. I started reading online. I ended up calling the Southern Nevada Health District, which was taking the lead on COVID-19 response here in Southern Nevada. And of course, no one was responding initially because it was obviously very early in the morning. And it was really at that point when I felt myself having what amounts to as an anxiety attack, which I'm not particularly prone to, you know, but having trouble controlling my breathing, feeling very anxious and feeling like I was having more and more trouble breathing. And so knowing that it would probably be hours before I would get any responses, I also started to try to think about, you know, how I could help myself. So I started researching, you know, things that might be helpful at boosting immune system, virality, anti-inflammation. And, you know, for a few hours, I tried to educate myself and then begin ordering on things like, you know, Prime Now and, you know, other sites to make sure that I could get some of these things, and texting friends of mine for things that I knew would be harder to find. And, you know, one of those texts was to a therapist that I'd actually just met the prior week in Belgrade. And she was online because of the time change, and she was able to set up a call with me pretty quick. So all of that kind of happened between, let's say, 3 and 6 in the morning. And, you know, thankfully it allowed me to start to calm down, to feel like there was, you know, things that I could be doing. And then finally, my primary care physician did get back to me. And frankly, he was pretty unhelpful. I mean, very unhelpful, I would say. You know, he made it very clear that he did not want to see me. He did not suggest that it made sense for me to go to any clinic because he strongly suspected that with my travel pattern and symptoms and so on, that I did have COVID-19. He warned me that there would probably be no access to tests because there was such limited supply that they were only going to be testing people who were being admitted to hospitals, you know, overnight. So not even just showing up in the ER, but, you know, where there was a risk of needing to be intubated and put on a respirator, were the only people that were going to be getting tested. And basically, he just encouraged me to call the Southern Nevada Health District again. And, you know, the prognosis was pretty generic advice. It was get sleep, stay hydrated, control your fever, rest. And there wasn't, you know, any other tools that he could recommend that he thought would be really, you know, useful. No drugs to prescribe, you know, no test to help determine exactly what it is and so on. So that frankly kind of freaked me out a little bit. And I, you know, called again to the government, discovered a menu that led to a voicemail account that was a pandemic office, left a voicemail and waited for them to call me back. I can pause there or I can keep kind of going on that narrative from Sunday.
No, I mean, I think it's helpful because, I mean, it's not just you weren't asymptomatic. I'm looking at your message to our friends. It required effort to breathe. It hurt to inhale deeply. I had an unproductive cough with aches in my eyeballs and body. I'm like, at this point, this is the advice you were getting from doctors. There was like nothing they could do.
Yeah. And I still think that's the advice that most people are receiving, which is, you know, whether you know you have it or not, the way to handle it is the same way that you would handle, you know, influenza, for instance. Mm-hmm. And you're just told to ride it out. And I forgot a small detail. You know, he basically told me, you know, please don't go to the hospital unless you're, you know, in real distress, because the hospitals are going to get overwhelmed. And, you know, I shared with him that I'm alone. And so I was worried about knowing when is the exact right moment, you know, to go, because I certainly didn't want to be a hypochondriac and burden the system unnecessarily. But then I also didn't want to wait too long. And, you know, even there, you know, the advice wasn't particularly reassuring. The advice was, use your best judgment. If you feel like you're dying, then go to the hospital. But if you don't feel like you're entering respiratory failure, stay home, for the good of the community, as well as, you know, for the fact that staying relaxed and in a, you know, calmer environment would probably be better for me from a recovery standpoint if I can avoid being hospitalized. And so
that's a hard question though, right? How would you know if you were going to die? Or that's a really hard question to even think about. I can't even imagine making that call.
Yeah, it was daunting. You know, it reminded me again that keeping a clear head would be really essential through this, and that it would help meaningfully help my survivability, because, you know, I would feel waves of panic where all I wanted was to be, you know, in the presence of a doctor, you know, and being cared for and knowing that they're monitoring things like my pulse ox and, you know, taking blood pressure and other readings to provide some reassurance that A, it isn't yet that severe, and B, that I was going to be okay because there would be people there to take care of me. And so it prompted me to want to redouble my efforts to be very thoughtful about how much of this was mental versus physical. And that even though it was difficult to breathe, where for the first time in my life, you know, I really had to focus on my breathing, like, because otherwise it would hurt and I would kind of spasm and my breath would catch. And so, whereas if I actually thought about my breathing and consciously, you know, use techniques like four-part breathing and things like that, then I could breathe deeply and smoothly and, you know, not have kind of a knee-jerk reaction. And I think it would have been very easy for me to feel those kinds of spasms and pain and think that that was respiratory failure. Hmm. And whereas I assumed, and I'm still kind of assuming this, because I think there's, the last time I looked was a few days ago, I still don't think that there's actually good resources online from medical professionals and not just members of the public, you know, trying to help with their own experiences to really give you a guide for what, how to read your own body on whether or not what you're feeling is respiratory failure. And so I just made assumptions that, you know, as long as I was breathing deeply and consistently, that my body was probably getting the oxygen that was needed and that I was safe to stay home. At the point when my breathing would have gotten, you know, more shallow, more painful, where coughing would have gotten even more extreme, then I felt like those would have been the symptoms I would have been looking for to head into a hospital.
Wow. So one last question before we go to break. How long did this, you mentioned this happened at 3 a.m. and you figured all this out, like, How long did this type of severity go on for? Like, what would, you know, someone might expect who's going through this alone?
So in my case, I was surprised at the number of ups and downs I had. I mean, people that were checking in on me frequently, and thankfully there were many of them, you know, they must have thought I was crazy, because I would, you know, on Monday morning, I felt really good and I was optimistic that already my immune system was beating it, you know, and then by, you know, late afternoon, evening, I was, you know, feeling the worst I'd ever felt during it. And so I'd have these ups and downs throughout, which was a bit of an emotional roller coaster. But, you know, I would say that it was roughly 5 days. So, you know, the symptoms really ramped up quickly on Saturday. And then on Wednesday, around the same time as my fever breaking, I started to feel meaningful improvement in my lungs. Now, I can still feel tightness in my lungs even today. And I did have a short relapse. So my fever broke on a Wednesday. And then that next Sunday, I ended up getting a fever again. And some of the lung symptoms came back more strongly for about 2 days. So it was really kind of 5 days and then kind of a 5 day break and then another 2 days of symptoms. But in my case, they weren't as severe. Whereas some people, when they relapse, it comes back stronger. And I'm really grateful that that wasn't the case for me.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think this is going to be really helpful for people to just understand and also to take it seriously. Up next, we'll dive more into Patrick's experience and also some of the best practices that got him through this traumatic experience.
Hi, I'm Mark Rako. Let's talk candidly for a moment. You have a company to run. You can't shake hands with your customers. Your employees now all work from home, and virtually every part of your business has changed since yesterday. How do you deal with the impact on your organization? Manage a rapidly changing supply chain? Respond to the needs of clients and employees in crisis, all with an eye on the bottom line? In the COVID-19 Business Playbook, top experts from a variety of relevant fields call out the crucial plays you need to succeed in the face of this unanticipated crisis. Mouth Media Network's Strategy Update Series is your go-to guide for moving forward, mitigating risk, and leading your business through to tomorrow in the face of whatever new normal arises. Strategy Update COVID-19 Business Playbook. Available wherever the best podcasts are found, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Makeup in Shanghai is the only B2B event in Shanghai with global makeup and skincare offers from ingredients, formulation, design, packaging, accessories, and full-service suppliers, along with workshops and conferences by top experts of the industry. The next edition, July 7th and 8th, 2020, at the Shanghai Exhibition Center. Whatever your project is, you can find the best contacts there. You can ask for a free badge on the website makeup-in-shanghai.com.
So Patrick, thank you so much for sharing your experience through kind of the hardest times going through COVID, and especially without very much support from the healthcare system. Can you tell us now, you know, how you're feeling, how long it's been since that peak, and kind of what are the takeaways and reflections?
Sure. I'm feeling well now. You know, at first, I would say that my recovery felt very quick. And then I would say the improvement kind of slowed down. I still have some issues breathing. I have, if I'm moving around, I cough. So it's been difficult to exercise because that's really when I feel that there's still some residual damage in my lungs. And so I'm doing breathing exercises to try to help that. Right now, I'm not really coughing because I'm seated. But if I were to be moving around, it'd be difficult to have a conversation. But I feel very grateful for the health that I have right now. Like I said, my energy is good. My mind is clearing. And I feel like I'm on a clear path to recovery. When I reflect back on, you know, the time period, I did have a natural advantage in the sense that I'm not in the highest risk category. I don't have a, you know, pre-existing health condition to exacerbate it. My, you know, my age is in a range that, at least from a fatality perspective, is low, although there's lots of people my age ending up in hospitals. You know, I also was in a position to take good care of myself. I wasn't caring for children. I wasn't needing to be focused on my job and other things that allowed me to get the rest and sleep, good diet, and so on that I needed. I mean, the third observation that I made, I think, is as much mental as anything else. What was really, I think, decisive for me was being able to relax and to control my anxiety attacks. I really believe in the ability of the body to heal itself. I mean, if you even look at the statistics, you know, where something like 80% of people have either mild symptoms or none, those are examples of the immune system fighting it off. And so, you know, I reflected on the fact that I hadn't given my immune system a very good fighting chance because of my behavior. But then what more could I do to help create an environment where my immune system responds strong, but then also doesn't over-respond? Because a lot of the damage that's being done in the lungs is because of these cytokine storms, as they call them, where your own immune system kind of starts, you know, overreacting and destroying lung tissue in the fight against the virus. And so I felt it was necessary to be boosting the immune system, reducing inflammation, but then also remaining calm so that there wasn't this sense of needing to overreact. I really believe that when you feel panicked, you know, it releases those stress hormones and causes major systems within the body to go haywire. And so, you know, thankfully over the last 5 years in particular, I've had, you know, regular, you know, yoga and meditation practices. I've done lots of different, you know, breath work and so on. And those tools immediately kicked in to really help me through this. And then, you know, I also started looking towards, you know, alternative medicine, Eastern medicine, and so forth as tools to help me. And so, you know, clearly these things are not decisive in themselves. I mean, China's been very hit by this, and obviously Eastern medicine and a lot of these, you know, types of supplementation and alternative medicine drugs originate from there in that region, and people still had big problems. But I do think that they help. And for me, I think it was important to feel like when kind of Western medicine was telling me that there was very little I could do to help myself other than take Tylenol and sleep, I felt like I was taking action to help myself. And, you know, it also gave a tangible way for my friends to help. You know, rather than just texting or calling, you know, if I was having trouble finding, you know, fresh turmeric root or something like that, you know, friends were, you know, all too happy to overnight it to me or, you know, help me find websites where I could order it myself and so on. And it really allowed me to kind of mobilize my community in a way that created a much more supportive environment for both of us, because I felt their sort of love and attention. And they felt like they were actually doing something really tangible. And then obviously, hopefully, these things also have their own benefits. And so I researched pretty much everything you can imagine that has any kind of, you know, scientific backing with observational studies to support that, you know, certain mushrooms and roots and herbs and, you know, refined chemicals and other things, you know, can boost the immune system, reduce inflammation. And inflammation is one of the biggest risk factors that they identify in the lungs. And so I wanted to do everything I possibly could to reduce that inflammation and to boost my immune system. And so that's what I did. And so I've been on a very strict regimen, you know, lots and lots of greens, more supplements than I've typically taken. And between the blend of the healthful effects of those things and the psychological benefit of feeling like I really am, you know, fighting this thing and not just being a victim, I think was pretty transformative for me. And I believe it's the thing that allowed me to continue to ride this out at home and not succumb to fear and, you know, end up being another person, you know, in a hospital bed.
Right. So, I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, like, what were, based on your research, and we realize you're not a medical doctor, but like, what were some of the Eastern medicines, like you mentioned turmeric, like, what were the recommendations that you got based on your research that, you know, clearly there's a holistic element that someone might want to try? And not hold, by the way.
Definitely the last thing I want to do is give medical advice, but I do think, you know, that there is evidence that some of these things really help. So, you know, obvious things like turmeric and ginger, and mixing the turmeric with black pepper, which has the, I forget how it's spelled or pronounced, piperine or whatever the compound in there is that helps absorption of the curcumin, which is the compound within turmeric that's supposed to be so anti-inflammatory. Various mushrooms, so things like lion's mane and, you know, chaga and others, shiitake mushrooms. There's a whole host of, you know, cordyceps and others that now are in blends, both in sort of capsule form as well as powders you can mix into hot water and to smoothies and so on. I had people send me black seed from Saudi Arabia, which they say cures everything except death itself. And so I've been taking little mouthfuls of those. And then, you know, there's various, you know, vitamins. Vitamin D is known to help with immune system function, zinc, magnesium, vitamin C. Vitamin C is also a diuretic. And so as long as you're getting super hydrated, then diuresis can be useful for, you know, making sure that you're flushing out toxins and making sure that, you know, your kidneys are, you know, washing everything out of the system and so forth. You know, I did research on things like meadow sweet, echinacea, and so on. So I was able to find teas with a number of these things in them. There's some tinctures that I was able to order, sometimes capsules, sometimes things that I pour into my smoothies. I have a beef liver, you know, enzyme thing that is full of amino acids and some helpful compounds. There's cod liver oil, which is actually extremely high in vitamin D, for instance.
Maybe you should go into starting a wellness concept. I'm calling you.
I mean, one of the things that interests me with Royalton Investment, and one of the reasons why I joined it, is that my business partner there has been intensely interested in wellness like me for, you know, at least the last decade. And he already has started a wellness brand. I mean, so what Royalton, its main business, it has several, is in the maritime industry and yachting. And he already created a wellness brand alongside the yachting brand to do wellness retreats aboard the boats. And we've been actively talking about how to expand those concepts. And I mean, that's been my biggest insight from, you know, these last 20 days of complete isolation and reflection. And, you know, the opportunities that are ahead is I think that people realizing that it's going to take a long time to get effective drug therapies and vaccines when there are more of these, you know, hopefully they won't be, you know, annual events, but we shouldn't assume this will be the last. Right. And so I think that the thing that people can really focus on to improve their lives and the lives of the people that they love are to educate themselves and practice wellness in terms of, you know, things like breath work and meditation and yoga so that they can calm themselves down during periods of high anxiety. And then also for all of us to, you know, really look at which of these things are efficacious to, you know, make sure that there's money outside of the traditional pharmaceutical company environment to study the benefits of these things. Because it's difficult, because if it's not patentable, it's difficult to get real money behind these things. And so I'm pretty passionate to, you know, focus in my next phase on giving people the tools, education, and having it be also, you know, science-based as much as we can, and helping raise money to fully explore what things are truly beneficial and what things may be, you know, snake oil, and then also increasing testing of those products to make sure that they're safe and being manufactured properly and stored properly and so on. And so I think that there's so much that can be done in the future in the broader wellness space. I've worked in travel and hospitality for many years. And so looking at the intersection of travel, hospitality, and wellness is definitely an area of focus for me on a you know, go forward basis.
That's amazing. No, I love that. And you're right. There's so much interest, especially in our communities, around lion's mane and understanding the opportunities around different ingredients, but who knows how they're manufactured and if they're stable and the quality. So that's super exciting. I wanted to go deeper because, you were sharing it in a really interesting way on the breath work. Like, what specifically, you talked about really thinking through visualizations and affirmations. Can you like walk us through like what type of breath work was helpful for you? And, you know, as you were panicking, because even outside of going through COVID, having less stress could be helpful. What worked for you specifically?
Yeah, I'm glad that you reminded me of the visualizations and affirmations because I hadn't remembered to mention them yet. One of the first things that one of my friends who's been a mentor and kind of guru for me mentioned was the power of visualization. And so I started, it might sound funny to some people, but I would literally, close my eyes, regulate my breathing, and start to, imagine my immune system successfully, fighting off the illness. And I was, visualizing, me getting healthy, tissues healing, and so on. And then related to that, I started doing affirmations. I started doing some simple ones, and then I've been working with a therapist in San Francisco who kind of helped me refine them. Of basically what amounts to mantras, of saying that, I'm a strong, healthy person. I'm going to get through this. My immune system is strong and it will effectively fight this virus, not overreact, not damage my own body in the process, and that I will have a full, recovery from this virus. And various versions of that, I would repeat several times a day for, 5 to 10 minutes at a time each. And, you can never know precisely, what is decisive. But at a minimum, I felt feelings of calm, more well-being, and so on, following those visualization and affirmation exercises. And, when I think back to some of those scary times, particularly on that Sunday, in the morning and in the afternoon and in that evening, I think it was pretty important. I get a little emotional even thinking back to those times of feeling panicked and just repeating these sayings to myself and then the remarkable impact it would have on my psychology by doing so. And so, those things were incredibly important. And then at the same time, and often following it, I would be doing a visualization or an affirmation, and then I would follow that with a meditation, which in many cases for me during this time period ended up being breath work rather than other forms of meditation, particularly since this was attacking my lungs. That's what felt most, topical for me, most efficacious. And, just simple, diaphragm and chest breathing, breathing in for 8 counts, holding it for, there's different methods, but I was doing one where I inhale for 8 counts, hold it for 4, exhale for 8, hold that for 4 with empty lungs and so on. And would keep that going for, 20 to 30 minutes. I think one time I went as long as 40 minutes. I didn't set a timer or anything, so I wasn't using Mindbell to time it. I was just trusting that I would know, when it felt right to end the meditation and the breath work. And I've continued doing that every day since. That type of breath work.
It's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Patrick, do you think, went to business school, you're CEO of a successful software company, a kind of leader in its space, and now into this new venture. Do you think as like a business leader and executive, what is the role and responsibility, as you think through going through like crisis management and things like that, that are kind of takeaways from you?
It's been a funny time for me because this hit right after I rotated out of a operating role in the company that I had, led for 8 years.
And so it's been a weird feeling to be a bit on the sidelines from that business, and then just ramping up in the new one. I think it's an opportunity during these really hard times to try to bring humanity into the really tough decisions that most businesses are having to make right now. I think that there's a real opportunity for senses of shared sacrifice. I applaud the companies that are, you know, looking at ways to, you know, cut salaries and furloughs instead of layoffs and so on, to kind of band together and help all of us get through this together. Obviously, layoffs are, you know, are critical in some companies, and so I'm not trying to say that avoiding them is entirely possible. But so I think just from like a leadership perspective, I think there's ways to try to, you know, get everyone to think as a community, to help each other, and to try to reduce fear. I mean, I see so much fear out there among employees, customers, my friends, family, and so on. And rightfully so, it's a scary time. But I think that, you know, leaders have an opportunity and maybe a duty to try to, you know, give people hope for the future, not unrealistically, so not in a naive way, but to get everybody focused on, you know, the future and solving the problems that we're facing right now rather than succumbing to despair. And so anyway, those are some of the things that have been top of mind for me. I, you know, obviously I'm also thinking about ways to build businesses more in the wellness space, but you know, as a leader, those are the things that have been top of mind for me.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
One of the things I haven't written about is that, you know, it's been a funny experience because I'm not known for being sick, right? Like that's not a persona I've ever held. And now I have been, and people have been reaching out. And I just have a few reflections on that. One is it's been really nice to create tangible ways for people to help. I mentioned that in terms of people being able to ship things. That's been really, really nice to find those opportunities. Another is it's just been really nice to have people reaching out. But also I wanted to highlight that a lot of times when people reach out, they say things like, are you back to 100%? You know, are you feeling, you know, are you healed? And it has a funny psychological effect. And so I would just encourage people to be thoughtful about the way that they check in with people. Because it, at least with me, I can only speak from my own experience. A lot of times I felt like I was letting them down if the answer wasn't yes. Mm-hmm. You know, where I needed to be like helping manage their sanity through this process. And I was happy to do it. So I'm not trying to vilify, because in some ways I think that that was a cry for help. So even among the sick people out there, I think it's really helpful to be patient and realize that, you know, maybe this is actually them, you know, just signaling that they're feeling anxious and they want to be reassured. But then I also just feel like if you really are trying to support someone, I think asking a little bit more of a open-ended question rather than presuming an answer where they can feel almost like a failure if they don't tell you, yes, I'm feeling better, is I think it's just helpful for everybody involved in this process who are either sick themselves or have loved ones that are, you know, that are fighting this, to just kind of keep that dynamic in mind. And hopefully we can all just be patient and loving with each other as we go through what are very difficult and anxious times for all of us.
And what's the best way for listeners to get in touch?
Sure. It's easy to reach me on either, you know, Facebook or Instagram. I guess those are both two good platforms for me. And it's PT Bosworth, PTBOSWORTH. That's on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I have that handle. So any of those three actually are fine.
Patrick, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. You know, it is very intimate and personal, but, you know, we really appreciate it. And I'm sure many of the listeners do too. And, you know, wishing you continued recovery and hope that this can help more people.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And I wish you and everyone involved in the podcast and all the listeners, you know, good health through these times.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of Beauty Is Your Business. This is Karen Moon. Hugs and air kisses, because you know we are socially distancing.
This has been Beauty Is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2019. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.